Welcome to the Wealth Studying Podcast. It's October 29th, 2014. This is episode 39. I'm your host, John Pugliano. I'm also the founder and money manager at investablewealth.com. This podcast is all about helping you learn and live the 10 wealth building principles to help you build not only your own personal wealth, but also attain personal freedom. Today will be the final episode of a two-part series where we talked about third quarter earnings. Before we get started, just want to say hello and welcome to all the new listeners and remind those of you that may be listening in for the first time, go back and check out the first 10 episodes. That's where we lay out the 10 wealth building principles and we build the foundation that we build from on every subsequent episode. So thanks for joining us. And without any further delay, let's pick up where we left off in the last episode and talk about some of the stocks that have been lagging behind. And these are what I'm going to call, the stodgy blue chip companies. And these are no surprise if you've been following my blog or listening to this podcast or just, paying attention to earnings and evaluations that come out in the everyday media. You know that these companies haven't been doing well. And in fact, even we just talked about Amazon, the fact that Amazon lost so much money this quarter, that was no surprise. They'd announced that last quarter. For some reason, people kind of ignored it last quarter. And we'll see if they wake up now and going forward with Amazon and if that stock will continue to decline. But some of the old stodgy guys, which again, they keep amazing me that they've held up so well over the last year or two. And these are companies like Coke, McDonald's, Procter & Gamble, AT&T, IBM, HP. You know, these companies, if you really dig down into their numbers, in my opinion, they don't have the growth either on the revenue or on the earnings side to support their valuations. Now, what they've done a good job of the last couple years is, that balance sheet engineering, buying back their stocks, cutting costs, moving things around. But someday you have to pay the piper. Someday the chickens come home to roost. We may be seeing that with a couple of these guys. IBM, again, literally, in my opinion, they've been a dog for a decade. They've taken a real hit so far this quarter. They're probably down something like, maybe 40% from their high earlier this year. I think the chickens are coming home to roost there. You can only have so many buybacks and so much of this balance sheet engineering before investors finally catch on. But these companies never give up. IBM's talking about restructuring, spinning off elements of its business. Will it work? I don't know. It just seems like a company like this should not be traded on the public market, though. I mean, they want to come out as being a growth company. It just seems to me that a company like IBM would be better off being private. I saw some numbers a week or so ago, and I can't remember where I saw them or I'd give the person credit. It might have been in Forbes magazine, but they looked at the last 5 or 6 years of how much IBM has actually earned, what its actual bottom line earnings was. And let's say it was, I'm just making a number up, but I think this might be in the ballpark. Say it was something like $105 billion. Well, over that same period of time, they way over exceeded that in payouts, things like stock buybacks, dividends, something to the tune of, maybe like 20-25% more payout than what they brought in. So they brought in maybe $102 billion and they spent $125 billion on stock buybacks, dividends, things of that nature. Well, you just can't do that forever. So watch IBM, see what happens to them. See how long they can keep trying to juggle these balls. See how long it is before they end up going private. Hewlett-Packard, HP, we're seeing similar things from them. They're talking about spinning off their printer and ink division of their company and separating that from the services group. Again, I don't know, what are they thinking? You can argue maybe that IBM has some type of a enterprise services group, but HP, I don't know, okay? I'm not an expert in that area, but from the little bit I've read, boy, it just doesn't seem like they offer a whole lot of value on the services side. I'd be skeptical of that one. Procter & Gamble is another one. It's an old stodgy, big company that tries to mask its lack of growth by moving things around on its balance sheet. Their latest gimmick is that they plan to divest themselves of Duracell, the battery company. And they're going to cut their brands something like, I think it was more than 25%. And so far, Wall Street's loved it. I mean, the investors are just piling in. Procter & Gamble stock is at a high for the year, and I believe it's at an all-time high. And you have to ask yourself, does that make sense? It's not at an all-time high because the company isn't making huge amounts of revenue or astronomical increases in their sales. They're really just coming forward with a cost-cutting plan saying that, hey, all those brands and all those companies and things that we've bought over the years and that we told you that we were going to be this big conglomerate of consumer brands and we were going to dominate the global market? Well, actually, we were wrong and we're cutting, 25 or so percent of them and we're just spinning these guys off. Well, that's not very reassuring for me. Again, not a company that's on my watch list, particularly with so much of the revenue coming in from overseas, the slowdown, the lack of growth we're seeing in Europe and in China. the potential consequences of the strong dollar hurting these guys when it comes to not only exporting, but also when they repatriate their money and they get hit up with exchange rate fluctuations. These big stodgy dividend-paying companies like Procter & Gamble, not on my watch list. Just one more thing I'll say about Procter & Gamble. When it comes to valuations, they're at something like a 20 times PE. That's a 20 times price to earnings ratio. In effect, you're saying when you buy that stock, you're paying a 20 times premium. You're basically saying you think you're going to get a return that would justify 20 years of earnings. Well, you know, 20 years is a long time to wait, particularly when you're talking about an old, slow company like this that only has growth prospects of, I think they've only grown at like 2 or 3% for the last couple years. Why would you be willing to pay a 20 times premium for a company like that? It's beyond me. That's why when I look at these companies, I say, gee, you know, a company that's trading for, say, $80-some dollars a share, it could easily be trading for $40 or $45 a share in a rational environment. But remember, the stock market is never rational. It's been said that the market can remain irrational longer than you can remain solvent. Back when Greenspan, the old chairman of the Federal Reserve's in the 90s, back when he criticized and coined the phrase irrational exuberance, you got to remember, he said that and it was another, 18 months, 24 months before the internet bubble actually burst. So he was right, there was irrational exuberance, but had you taken his advice and gotten out of the market when he talked about it, you'd have lost something like a 200-250% gain in the NASDAQ. But you have to be careful with that, because if you didn't get out, before that bubble burst, and people forget this, the NASDAQ, in nominal terms, has never reached its high. Its high that it hit on the summer of the year 2000. So we're over 14 years, and in nominal terms, not even counting inflation, the NASDAQ has never gotten back to those numbers. So that's why you have to always be conscious and cautious and say that just because the market's irrational doesn't mean that it's always going to stay that way. There's not always going to be a bigger sucker to buy that stock off of you. Now remember, I'm not saying the sky's falling, but what I am saying is that be cautious. The chickens could be coming home to roost, particularly in certain classes of stocks. But overall, it's not all bad. Earnings are going to hit at probably at least 4.5%, which is respectable. Don't be surprised if they hit 6% or exceed 6% of earnings. And that's because these companies have sandbagged. But remember, that is still, in some cases, half or more than half what the original estimates were. So yes, the economy's stable. The U.S. markets are growing. Things are better than they were 3, 4, 5 years ago. That's all true. But they're also not as good as what the forecast would have had us believe. And when we look at what's happening around the world, those markets are definitely slowing down. But quickly, I do want to mention, again, it's not all gloom and doom. Some of the big stodgy stocks that they're still doing pretty well, DuPont, UPS, 3M, Ford, they've all announced pretty good earnings. And then some of the ones that aren't necessarily huge companies, but definitely, you know, brand name companies, names that you'd recognize, Southwest Airlines, we profiled them a week or so ago, Dunkin' Donuts, their stocks are doing very well. Their earnings seem to be doing good. And then all these stocks that I just mentioned, to me, now I'm looking at this from my bias, from the particular blinders that I have on, because remember, I keep focusing on the impact of lower gasoline, lower petroleum costs, that's at least a near-term trend that's going to be around for a while. And what do all these companies I just mentioned have in common? I think a lot of them are related to the decrease that we've seen so far in petroleum prices and then the expectations of lower gas prices. DuPont and 3M, large chemical, specialty chemical producers, a lot of their feedstocks are petroleum-based, so they're going to see a savings. UPS, Southwest, both maintain large fleets of aircrafts, and in UPS's case, of vehicles as well. So any decrease in gasoline prices, diesel, jet fuel, that's all going to help both of those companies. Ford Motor Company, it was said that although they've been riding a decent wave here lately, you got to remember that a lot of cars have been worn out. Average age of a car on the street, I think, is something like 12 years. So a lot of people the last 18 months have been in a market to buy new cars. But Ford's most recent numbers, I think why the stock's up and why people have been most impressed with them is that they've come from their highest profit margin cars, and that's their F-150 truck and their SUVs. Now the F-150, they have a new aluminum frame, and they may not be making as much on that as they had in the past, but they're definitely making high profits on the SUVs. And again, I think it's not too much that you would want to argue the point that people are starting to buy bigger trucks and SUVs again because they're seeing the price of gas come down. Same thing, you know, to a lesser extent with Dunkin' Donut. Let's imagine you're Joe Sixpack, right? You're just the average American. You get up, you're going to work, you pull your F-150 truck into the gas station, You fill it up with diesel or gas, whatever it takes. You notice that the price is down. You've saved $2 or $3 or $4 at the pump. You look across the street. You see Dunkin' Donuts. You say, hey, I'm putting a couple extra bucks in my pocket. I'm going to go over there and have a coffee and a donut. I mean, that's the way the economy works. It may not be that simple, but that's the way it is correlated. And I think if you think in these terms, you'll be able to connect the dots and see, as trends develop, which stocks are going to emerge to be the leaders. Because they'll always fluctuate. There'll always be a rotation. The biotech stocks that were so hot 12 months ago, maybe they won't be so much in the next 6 months. Maybe it'll be more of the Dunkin' Donut kind of companies. Just something for you to think about. Now let's transition over and talk about general market conditions. I think because we're seeing stable and decent earnings coming in, the indexes are doing well. We had been seeing, like on the NASDAQ and the S&P 500, where the 50-day moving average had been resistance. For the last 3 or 4 trading sessions, the indexes would get up close to the 50-day moving average, but they couldn't get above it. And that was a concern to me. I'd mentioned before that that was a key number we wanted to watch for. We wanted to make sure the indexes stayed above their 200-day moving average and that they could eventually, you know, hopefully sooner rather than later, break through their 50-day moving average. Well, we saw that happen yesterday. The NASDAQ easily gapped up above its 50-day moving average, and the S&P 500, while it didn't gap up, it strongly went through its 50-day moving average and closed up at an intraday high. It did that in above-average volume, although not as high volume as we've seen in some of the recent sessions, but it was above-average volume. That's an excellent sign. And on the NASDAQ, I'm not quite sure if it actually hit above-average, but it was certainly average volume. And whenever you have something approaching a 2% increase, that's good volume to have. So I think the major indexes are holding up well. And this is at the same time when we're seeing some stocks, hitting lows. We're seeing the petroleum companies, the petroleum services companies, pretty much anybody in the energy field, although they've come up some in recent days. I mean, they're suffering. Money has definitely pulled out of them. We've seen money pull out of some of these other stocks I mentioned, the AT&Ts, the IBMs, Google, Amazon. But at the same time, because the averages are moving up, that means that other stocks must be making either all-time highs or at least relative highs. I think we're seeing a lot of money come out of the big, stodgy, blue-chip, multinational, big dividend-paying stocks. And we're not necessarily seeing that go into the small, very teeny, high-risk Russell 2000 stocks. We are seeing it hit, I think, somewhere in that stable mid-cap range. And just on a personal note, that's why I'm such a fan of trading in the stock market. Now, while there are times, when the tide goes out and all the boats sink and go down, that certainly happens. But I would say, on average, most of the times, even if it's bad for some sectors, it's good for others. And if you're not a buy and holder, if you're someone that's willing to do the homework and look at the trends and identify the momentum, watch for which companies are making new highs and which companies are making new lows, then in many cases, you can position yourself to making profits. That's in good times and in bad times. And that's why over the last nearly 30 years, I've been really fascinated with the stock market. And as I said earlier, I think the chickens are coming home to roost for some stocks. I definitely have concerns about the slowdown in global growth. I have concerns about the banking instability, not so much in the U.S., but overseas, particularly China real estate, all the banks in Southern Europe. And then because we really don't know how much U.S. banks or the Federal Reserve or other sovereign debt or government money or central bank money are tied up into those banks, I mean, that could be concerning. That could really pull things down. In fact, I think later this week I'll talk about my biggest concerns for where that next danger is going to come from. We may have an episode on that. But overall, the market's performing very well, and I wouldn't be surprised if, barring some kind of major problem, some unexpected black swan event comes up in the next, 6 to 8 weeks, we may have a nice run as we go into the end of the year. Now, we have midterm elections to deal with. We still have, cases of Ebola floating around out there. There's Russian sanctions, problem with expanding Russian military, always problems in the Middle East. There's always something that can go wrong. But barring something unseen, these indexes are performing pretty well. Take out a chart of the S&P 500. Look at how well it's done over the last 2.5 weeks. It hit this most recent low on October 15th. Within 4 days, which is our general rule for getting back into a market, it had gone up exceedingly high. It had bridged and gone above its 200-day moving average. Since then, and that's when many investors like myself or that follow my line of strategy would have gotten back into the market. That's about 5 or 6 trading sessions ago. It hasn't gone straight up, but it's performed very well. it ebbed and flowed, but it always seemed to go up in days that it went up. It went up in higher volume for the most part than the previous day when it would have gone down. It seems to be closing in the high end of its trading range for the day, even on down days, with I think just one exception in there for the last, I think, 2.5 weeks. It's always traded, if not at the top of the day's trading range, at least somewhere near the upper end, other than one day. That's a very good sign. It closed well above the 50-day moving average. And that level, not coincidentally, is an area where there had been prior support. This is where the market had made its high earlier in the year, kind of the end of July, if you remember when the market was making highs. That's at about the level we are right now. So all the gains that we'd previously lost in the last 4 or 5 weeks have all, for the most part, been made up. Those are the ones that came through this summer. So we're back to that resistance point. We're at the resistance point of where we were at the end of July. Now the question is, we've made it this far back up. Can we retrace those, and can we get up to the levels that were hit in September? And so right now the S&P is at like 1980, right in that range. That's the resistance levels from the highs that we saw in July. And there seems to be support there as well as resistance. So we want to watch and we want to see if the market can break through that. If we do get these good earnings, if the quote, you know, the not surprise earnings expectations, earnings beats come in and we have third quarter profits, you know, coming in at 6-7%. Maybe we have, who knows what in midterm elections. The media can spin it either way. If the Republicans take control, they can spin that's good for stocks. If the Democrats keep it, they can say that, hey, that maintains a status quo. So it's all going to depend on how they spin it. So in the next week or so, we're going to be through the midterm elections. We're going to know the earnings for third quarter on all the S&P 500. And depending on how that gets spun by the media, if we can break through this resistance we're at now, which is, I say, right around that 1980 range on the S&P 500, the next level we want to look at is getting up around 2000. If we can break 2000, then the question will be, how high can it go? And if it can get past 2020, that's 2020 on the S&P 500, if it can get past that, then there'll definitely be some partying on Wall Street. And between now and the end of the year, there'll be all kinds of speculation for Santa Claus rally. Now, will all that enthusiasm mean that we're really going to get beyond 2020? You know, that we'll see more all-time highs? I don't know. You know, that might be the time to take your profits and get out. That's when the contrarian kicks in me. But at this point, I have no idea. I take this day by day. I have no forecast. Right now, I'm in the market. I like what the charts are doing. I'm going to ride it out for a little bit. My opinion could totally change tomorrow. Well, that's what I think is happening in the markets. All I can tell you is sit back and relax. Because we're above the 50-day moving average, I would say that things have stabilized a little bit. Maybe you can take your seatbelt off, but I'd at least still keep my fingers crossed. Now, in the next episode, I've had questions, people asking me about how I'm playing this, what I'm invested in. And because of regulations of what I can and can't say as a licensed investment advisor, I won't come back in the next episodes with specifics. I won't name specific company names. But I will give you a fairly specific indication of what stocks or what industries or what sectors I'm in, how I'm playing this, and what I'm looking for going forward. Again, this is just educational to help you see the things that a money manager, an independent money manager like myself, what we consider, what we think about. I want you to be able to make better investment decisions. And that's whether you're managing your own portfolio or whether you're hiring somebody to do it for you. You should at least be informed and you should know what's going on. Well, I hope you'll be here for the next episode. I think you'll find it interesting. As always, feel free to contact with me with questions or opinions or suggestions. You can do that through the website, wealthsteading.com. So until the next episode, this is John Pugliano wishing you the very best of returns.